I would just like to say that if you are interested in doing something like this, you don't have to do what we're doing, but what we're going to do is we're going to have a discussion with four or five other teachers every week. One of the weeks we'll meet together for breakfast and talk about what we've read. The other week we'll have a dialogue versus email and go through that for about 10 to 12 weeks. I just think it's important to every year see, can I do better? Can I do more? Can we do better? Can we do more?
First of all, I just want to thank you, Brett and Jonathan. This information's been very helpful. I just wanted to comment from the perspective of a young person and say that having some kind of online presence is really imperative for people of my generation. So if with just regular businesses, if they don't have some kind of web page that I can go look at, I'm not very likely to go to that business if there's not some way I can look it up on the internet and get information about it. So having a website and a website that looks professional is something that for people my age is really important. And even if you're not tech savvy, there's plenty of options for being able to build your own website and do it pretty cheaply. I know, Clint and I use Weebly for the website at 11th Street. Squarespace is another hosting option. So there's lots of options for you, even if you're not necessarily familiar with technology. And it might even be a good idea to engage other young people at your congregation to assist with upkeep of the website or having a social media presence.
Jonathan Edwards, are you going to ask yourself a question?
Maybe. I just wanted to follow up with something I'd forgot to say. In about 4 hours, I can build you a website, give you the content, and get you on your way. So if you were to say, hey, I'd love to do it, but man, it's going to take me a week to figure all that out. I've done it now for mine and for two churches, and I've got two other congregations that are asking me to build their website based on that same template. I can do it too. And since he's not here, I'm allowed to say it maybe without facing any wrath, but if my dad can figure it out. And his first question to me was, Jonathan, how do I log into my Gmail? And I knew I had a long way to go since that was the first question. But Dad runs the leads for Mabelvale Pike and does a great job maintaining it. And anyway, he's from the Fred Flintstone generation, if you can believe it, and is able to get those feet pedaling.
I don't know if Jonathan made this point or not. Maybe he didn't. I missed it. But his correspondence course, he can send you those if you wanted to order those. But also, you can go online and just print those out yourselves, and you don't have to go through him at all to use those tools.
Plenty of friends.
I've got kind of a technique question. A couple of weeks ago, I was following up some leads in another state who had taken courses that we'd advertised through Facebook, and Jonathan didn't get into this, but when you do the Facebook advertising, you do also get what they call organic reach, which is not what you pay for, but somebody sees your advertisement and they share it, and their friends see it, and maybe somebody in Michigan signs up even though you're advertising in Texas. And we had a few students who finished in California. They finished the sixth lesson. And I was out there, so I went by to see them. And I ran into a problem because I hadn't kept very good tabs on how they did. I knew generally how they had done during their lessons. One person did so well, I assumed she was a member of the Multiple Cups Church. She was a Mormon. And when it was all said and done, I don't know how she didn't get that Mormonism is wrong after she finished Jean Tope's Bible course and got essentially a perfect score on it. But what I had not done was prepare for the follow-up as efficiently as I should have. And so something that we've started back home is we take pictures of every lesson, every graded lesson, and we're going to save those, at least the photographs of them, in a computer file. And when a person finishes all six lessons, I intend to put together a packet of photocopies of the pages of their lessons where they got significant questions wrong, or maybe even some significant questions right, and use the way they answered their questions to formulate a follow-up study. And when I deliver lesson six, typically I've delivered lesson six and a Bible and sought further study. What I think I'm going to start doing is calling them and just scheduling a follow-up study and saying we need to arrange a time to go over the lessons that you've taken and to use that a little bit more effectively. And maybe I'm just showing up late to the pie supper and everybody else here already has this system and they all handle it this way already because it's intelligent, but it just recently came to me, and I did feel like kind of a buffoon for not thinking of it early, but you know that's kind of how some of us have to learn. Anyway, I wanted to share that and get the thoughts and perspective of the other people here. How do you work through the correspondence course program and keep tabs of a student's progress to get the most out of what they have learned during those lessons when the correspondence course is finished?
Very good. Thank you for sharing that. I don't do most of the correspondence courses now, but I am going through. I'm going through one right myself now, having a grading one, and I think it's a good idea. Somebody, I think it was Steve Bowen, started to send a little extra material related to the topic in with each one of the courses, and you know, obviously sending notes along with that to try, although you can't do much, try to establish a little bit of a rapport relationship with them. But I like your idea of just planning on that sixth lesson, bring them a Bible and schedule them to study.
Nathan, back.
Thanks for that, both of you. I just want to mention a couple things about websites. We're doing a similar thing at Green Oaks with Facebook advertising for with a correspondence course. Just a couple things about a website, kind of piggybacking off of Noah. One of the things with a website and some of these websites like Weebly is they provide kind of ingrained Google Analytics with your website. And I don't know a whole lot about Google Analytics, but I do know that that's part of how you get ranked on web searches. And it's something to consider if you have a young person or someone's tech savvy looking into some of that so that your name is the top search that's found. We've had several people stop in, particularly on Wednesday nights, because they were in the area, they Googled Church of Christ, and we were the first pop, and they came and visited us. And so that's helpful to know. Kind of along the lines of something Clint was saying with follow-up, when we first started the program, I would go with the first lesson and hand deliver it to them at the door. And I was getting a lot of people that weren't necessarily angry. Some of them were angry that I was there, but they were not real happy that I was there. I wouldn't say any of them were overjoyed. And I'd heard, I think from Dad, who got it from Clint, so Clint, you'll get credit whether you did or not, but they'd suggested maybe going on the second lesson. If they completed the first one, send it back in, go and see them on the second lesson. And when I showed up with the lesson that they've already completed, they were much more receptive than when I showed up cold turkey the first time and they were not expecting me. And I've had some good conversation with people as a result of that. One thing, kind of along the lines of what Jonathan was talking about with Facebook advertising, one of the things I've been encouraging people to do across the country is doing advertising correspondence course, like he was mentioning. But also, if you have a website like Weebly provides, it's very simple. You can set up a blog page. And on a blog page, you can have people subscribe so that every time you post something, they get a notification. And with a blog, you can take your videos from YouTube or Kevin's videos from YouTube, and you could post them on your blog page. And they do paid advertising on Facebook to where they see, oh, Brett's got a new sermon on the cup. And they click on that. It takes them to your website, and they watch the YouTube video. They can watch it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whenever they want to. You collect their email address so that once next week comes along and I post Brett's next video, they get an email notification and they get a video program that's coming to their pocket. And there's, you can do that at as cheap as $5 a day. Any congregation in the whole brotherhood could afford to do something like that. And it's just an extra type of way to reach people that's worth considering. I just want to say this too. Website building is not rocket science anymore. That is a very intimidating thought of building a website. And with the help of some of the website building companies that are out there, you can do it. But I think, too, this is an area that maybe our wives could assist us in. My wife is a computer software engineer. She's way more tech savvy than I ever will be, knows more about that stuff. And that's something that a woman could do under the direction of her husband, a good work that they could be involved in doing. And also in grading lessons, that's something some of our members and our women could be involved in. And sometimes we talk about what can a woman do? There's a lot that a woman can do in that regard that we could think about utilizing them in a role.
Good suggestions, thank you.
I just want to add to that about, I agree with everything that Nathan said, and about collecting information from people when they are signing up to get services, either Bible studies or through the mail or online or anything. I had suggested to some folks that were asking me about it to ask for as much information as you can get from them. Even if it's an online study, get their telephone number and their physical mailing address if you can. Of course, some people aren't going to sign up for something that demands their telephone number or their mailing address. But if they don't want to communicate with you, then you probably aren't going to ever get to have a Bible study with them anyway. The idea of targeting is you are going to cut some people out, but the people who you end up contacting are people that are going to be open to personal engagement on the subject that you want. And I think that is an important thing to keep in mind. You don't want to throw your money away and collect a bunch of names and know, well, there's 700 people in town that want to study the Bible. I wish I knew how to get a hold of them. You know, you want to be able to collect all of that information. And I'll tell you, inviting young people in the congregation to help be a part of this is a great thing. But I would encourage them not only to grade lessons, but to write correspondence follow-up letters. These are basic doctrinal subjects. And you want to teach your young people how to defend baptism for the forgiveness of sins. The person has marked, was the jailer saved by believing only? Yes. Okay, now this young person, this 16-year-old or 18-year-old in your congregation, they have to write the letter to explain why that answer is incorrect. And obviously you can work with them as a preacher, but give them the responsibility to write it, and they'll learn their Bible, and that'll be a life-changing experience for them. It's something that I started doing, and I really have found it to be a helpful practice.
Excellent.
One other thing I forgot to mention. When you're collecting all this information, these addresses, typically with our correspondence course, we get an email address and a physical land address. They may or may not give us their telephone number, but we get their land address and their email. Whenever we have a gospel meeting, I send them our flyer for our gospel meeting to every email and one to their home address as well. So you're building a list of people in your area interested in religious matters to contact to advertise your gospel meeting. With that, when you email people, so since we've been doing the correspondence course advertising for about since May of 2015, and we now have a collection of over 400 email addresses that we can mail to in a mass mailing. And if you do that on Gmail, they will kick you out of your account and block you from coming in, and it takes a long time to get access back to it. But you can set up a free MailChimp account and build your list through MailChimp, and you don't have any of those problems. So that's just a little tidbit for what that's worth.
We're going to go ahead and get Todd since we're right there.
I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. We as members of the local congregation, speaking of our duty, we need to realize and understand that if we don't fulfill our duty to evangelize, we could very well be the cause that the leadership in our local congregation brings some kind of social gospel in. Because a congregation wants to grow. And we want to do it however we can, typically. And a lot of times that gives excuse for some type of celebrate recovery or something to that effect to be used by the local congregation to strive to bring people to the church to grow the congregation. Whereas if we fulfill our duty as members of the body of Christ, as members of our local congregation, we don't have to look to those things. And it, we need to understand that, that, you know, we could be that very cause and be very careful of that.
Thank you.
Glenn Osborne, when I studied with him years ago, told me something, and I use it. It is very helpful. And that was have an end in mind and let your person that you're studying with know that there's an end. And the least successful studies I've ever had were the ones where I never let them know that the end was however long it was supposed to be. And this works both with people who aren't Christians and also members of the church. We've tried a few different times. I've tried to get some guys to study on Tuesday nights. But then suddenly it was, I have to give up Tuesday for the rest of my life. Versus, hey, for the next 5 weeks, I want to get together with you on a Tuesday evening. Suddenly there is, I can commit to that because I know that, you know, even though I have different things to do, for 5 Tuesday nights I could commit to that. My success is a lot higher when I tell people exactly what the parameters are of the study.
Just a couple minutes to one of the challenges for us as evangelists or as people trying to evangelize is making sure we're doing it the right way. It's interesting, the Bible talks about being bold, but it also talks about being gentle. In Acts 13:46, then Paul and Barnabas grew bold. That word bold means to speak freely, to grow confident. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 2, but even after we had suffered and before we were spitefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we were bold in our God to speak to you the gospel in much conflict. Philemon 1, verse 8, therefore, though I might be very bold in Christ to command you what is fitting. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and there's many scriptures on that. The idea is freedom in speaking, unreservedness in speech without ambiguity, free and fearless confidence, cheerful courage. Those are all part of that word. But we also are to present it in a gentle way. 2 Timothy 2:24, the servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach. And that word gentle means to be affable and mild. And we can do both of those. We just have to focus on both of those principles.